welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, May 6th, and here are some of the stories we are following. Chadians are voting today for president amid numerous challenges, including security in the Sahel region.
One of the big problems actually is related to the independence of the electoral institutions. And right now, most of the people who are members of these institutions are members of the party MPS.
The only female candidate in today's Chad election hopes their vote will usher in a federal system of government. Togo's ruling party wins a majority of parliamentary seats in the April 29th elections. Tanzania breathes a sigh of relief as the threat of tropical cyclone Hidaya decreases. South Africa's ruling ANC reportedly postpones a disciplinary hearing for former President Jacob Zuma.
Members of the ANC are expected not to campaign or support any party that is contesting with the ANC.
And pro-Palestinian demonstrators in the United States stand their ground. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Chadians are voting today for president amid numerous challenges, including security in the Sahel region. Military strongman Mohamed Idriss Déby, who named himself interim president, is running for the title in addition to nine other candidates. Lady Bissima of the Party for Integral Democracy and Independence is the only female presidential candidate. She tells me she hopes today's election will usher in a federal system of government for Chad.
I think that the election will give us the victory for federal state. Since independence, Chad was unitary governance. Now we know that Chadian would like to have a federal state. So that and we think that it will be possible for us to gain this election. Because it's not the first time we go to election in 2021. We have a second candidate, and we know that when the referendum takes place, the tendency is for federal form of governance.
Are you confident, madam, the election will be free and fair?
Confident? It's not really in Chad. We hope to have this victory. The structure in charge of the management of result can change the result. So the really result will be in favor of federal state, because our society project is for federalism.
Some opposition people are calling for boycott because they think that the election is merely a coronation of Idriss Déby, since he controls every government institution.
Those that chose to boycott the election is their choice. So that I cannot judge what they say. But we know that all the actors in Chad, they are not proactive. For that, they don't take care for the process, because the election don't begin now. For us, we make observation, and the other actors are not aware about that. Now, it's not possible to change. It's late for each actor to talk. We have the core responsibility in this situation, and everyone have to assume what he is doing.
Madam, thank you so much for the opportunity, and good luck on the election.
Thank you.
And that was Lady Bissima of the Party for Integral Democracy and Independence, and the only female candidate in Chad's presidential elections on Monday. She spoke with me from the capital, N'Djamena. As Chadians vote today, Monday, in the presidential election, civil society groups, including the Chad Bar Association, are expressing concern about the independence of the national agency monitoring the elections, also known as ANJ, and of the Constitutional Court. Njerendi Legere tells me is the president of the Chad Bar Association. He tells me that most of the members of those two institutions are also members of the ruling Patriotic Salvation Movement, also known as MPS.
You can see that the population is really willing for the free and transparent election for change, because till now, our country is one of the last country in the end of development. So, but one of the big problems actually is related to the independence of the electoral institutions. I would like to talk about the independence and neutrality of ANJ. ANJ is this institution in charge of organizing the election, and also the constitutional court. You know, most of the political actors, when the electoral code has been voted, they think that this electoral code cannot guarantee the independence and the neutrality of the institutions. And right now, most of the people who have been designed as the members of these institutions, most of them are members of the party MPS. That is one of the big problems. And most of the people are actually the so-called ANJ, the institution in charge of the election, is having some position related to the provision of the electoral code, the provision related to photography of the results, to display the results, related to the delivery of minutes to candidates' delegates. And they are even trying to introduce some provision that is not in the electoral code. That is one of the big problems. So we are a bit afraid that in this period be some violation of human rights. So what we are calling for the independence of the all institutions in charge of the elections. And we know that in this country, it's not easy to have the so-called independent institutions. So you can see that the population is afraid, even if in the electoral code, it's clear that the institution in charge of election are independent. So we are calling for each party to avoid human rights violation before, during, and after the elections, and to let every citizen vote freely, and this can be guarantee peace and pacification of Chad. That is our position. That is my position.
Do you support any particular candidate?
I'm not supporting any candidates myself. As the president of the Bar Association, the Chad Bar Association is calling for free and independent elections so that the results will be really what is coming from the vote of the population.
Gerandi Legere Dioro is the president of the Chad Bar Association. He was speaking with us from Cameroon. Results from Togo's April 29th election for parliamentary and regional representatives have been announced, with the ruling Union for the Republic Party winning 108 out of 113 seats in parliament. This could pave the way for the implementation of a controversial constitutional reform adopted last month, which allows the parliament to elect the president as opposed to a direct election by voters. Gilbert Bawara is the Togolese Minister for Civil Service, Labor and Social Dialogue. He tells me the results show that the ruling party won an overwhelming victory.
The result is that the majority union has obtained 108 over 113. It means almost we have an overwhelming majority at the National Assembly.
I was speaking to an opposition person who said that the turnout was low, and also that
61% is not low compared to the other countries around Togo. I would like to remind that the last legislative elections in Benin, the rate was 37 or 38. And the last legislative elections in Cote d'Ivoire, it was below 40. So it means the rate is still very high in Togo.
When I spoke with you, you said there were some outside observers, but I was told that the government also denied some local monitors like the Episcopal Church and others from monitoring the election.
Yes, but when you take the Catholic Church, they had already expressed their opinion, and they said they were opposed to what we were doing. So how do you expect them to become neutral and independent after having expressed their opinion? So I think when we want to have something very credible, we have also to be very fair in how we select the observers.
So, Gilbert, now that you have won the election, what's next?
Yeah, we will continue to run the country, taking into consideration the interests of the population. But we will also be listening to the opinion of everyone, including the political actors. It is not because we have an overwhelming majority that we will stop dialoguing and listening to the citizens and to all the components of the society. For the sake of the country, we have to continue working with some openness.
I guess what I was asking therefore is that there was a controversy going into the election about the new constitution. What happens now to that constitution? Does that mean that President Fona Simba now will continue or will be elected by the parliament?
First of all, we have just ended the election. We will take time and see how we apply the new constitution. President Fona has never expressed his own opinion and his interest. But in the party, we made the campaign indicating that we would like him to become the president of the council, the head of the government, but not the head of the state, because we will have the president of the republic who will be the head of state, who most probably will be another person. And then President Fona, we would like him to become the president of the council. So it means the head of the government. But for the time being, this is premature. We don't want to discuss about that before the new National Assembly is installed and the Senate is also put in place.
Gilbert Bawara is the Togolese Minister for Civil Servants and World and Social Dialogue. He also is a prominent member of the ruling Union for the Republic. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, May 6th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. In South Africa, the legal wrangling between the ruling African National Congress and former President Jacob Zuma continues as the country prepares for its May 29th elections. Zuma is a likely presidential candidate for the Umkhonto Wesizwe or MK party. The latest development is that the ANC has reportedly postponed a disciplinary hearing for former President Zuma for deciding to run against the ANC. Professor Sipho Osipe is a political analyst and the former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He tells me the ANC postponed the disciplinary hearing because some members felt that the party already has a lot on its hand ahead of the election.
The ANC's constitution is very clear in terms of what it expects from its members. And one of those is that members of the ANC are expected not to campaign or support any party that is contesting with the ANC. And the former president, Jacob Zuma, because of his unhappiness with the current leadership, took it upon himself to state publicly that he will not support the ANC, but will go and support a new party called Umkhonto Wesizwe. And based on the constitutional prescription, any member who does what he has done is guilty of misconduct. And it is upon that that the ANC decided that he should be disciplined. So the ANC has delayed the process of discipline processes because there were some amongst it who felt that the ANC has a lot in its hand and it would better focus on campaigning than on dealing with the former president.
Professor, also, so many legal cases, I'm losing track. What about this one about signature forgery? Where is it?
Well, it is still under investigation. And there are some people who think this is something that has been deliberately created. There are many people in this country who no longer believe anything because they see that MK party has become so strong that there'll be a manufacturing of lies. And the issue of forging signatures will also be one of those. And it will be difficult because the police at the moment, they're saying they're investigating it. And the IEC says it wants also the police to move fast. But anything that suggests that the new party must be removed will be seen as part of the state manipulation of the democratic institution, including the IEC. Because even as we speak, the IEC took the MK to court, to the electoral court, and it lost. And there are some people who are saying the IEC needs to be seen to be independent. So when you have a commission that is now embroiled in the courts against another party, and especially when that party is seen as challenging the ruling party, people begin to suspect that there's something amiss.
Professor Sipho Sipi is a political analyst and a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. Tanzania is breathing a sigh of relief now that tropical cyclone Hidaya has spared the country by causing little damage. The country's meteorological agency announced over the weekend that this cyclone was no longer a threat when it lost its strength after making landfall in the Indian Ocean on Saturday. However, government spokesperson Mubare Matinye tells me that the heavy rains left behind by Hidaya have compounded the flooding that has been impacting Tanzania and neighboring Kenya.
Our meteorological authority was actually monitoring from the 1st of May, keeping us informed on each and every stage of the tropical cyclone Hidaya. But from Saturday morning, as it landed in an island of Mafia, it basically lost its strength, and thereafter, the monitoring basically that there will be no tropical cyclone Hidaya anymore. So we are out of danger. Caused a lot of rain in the coast area of Tanzania, especially in the region of Mtwara, Lindi, and in the coastal region. A lot of floods there, but we haven't lost anybody. We don't have injuries. Of course, we have some damage to the properties because the wind was moving at a very high speed.
In terms of the rain that it caused, Tanzania and the East African region were already suffering from this torrential downfall that's been happening. Any new information in terms of any damage or any new deaths?
We're expecting these rains before the rest of the end of May. It's a rain season here, only that the rain is just more than what we are used to. 200% of some of the places in our country, for example. And the neighboring Kenya, it has devastated the country. But what actually we are expecting is that after the month of May, it will no longer be such a serious issue. It has damaged a lot of the infrastructure, roads, rails, some buildings, school buildings, even hospitals and residences. And we are now actually working on repairing those things so that everybody can get back to normal life.
Here is the spokesperson for the Tanzanian government. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Despite the fact that many of their encampments at university campuses have been dismantled, pro-Palestinian demonstrators in the United States are standing their ground. If the protests continue, some analysts say they could have an impact on the 2024 presidential election. Viewer's Veronica Baldera Iglesias explains.
Over 20 pro-Palestinian demonstrators were arrested by police and saw their encampment forcefully dismantled Saturday at the University of Virginia. But scenes like this don't seem to discourage the protesters, many of whom have already taken their demands to their graduation ceremonies in states like Michigan. After Tuesday's police clearing of a building that had been taken over by protesters at Columbia University, New York City Mayor Eric Adams appeared Sunday on ABC's This Week show. He said law enforcement will ensure calm prevails during the graduation ceremonies.
We will do our job, and if the institutions decide to graduate their students and celebrate a beautiful experience with their families, we will make sure it's done in a peaceful manner.
President Joe Biden addressed the protests Thursday, and his re-election campaign co-chair, Mitch Landrieu, appeared Sunday on CNN's State of the Union to underscore Biden's core message.
Everybody has a right to protest, but they have to protest peacefully. If they're protesting violently, that has to end. There's no place for that. There's no place for anti-Semitism. There's no place for Islamophobia.
On his part, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, renewed his criticism of the pro-Palestinian demonstration Sunday. He posted on his Truth social media platform that Biden is, quote, the primary reason for all these terrible protests. It's a political strategy that Trump is using to support his own re-election bid, says political scientist Michael Traugott.
And he wants them to stop. He wants protesters, including students, to be arrested and removed from campus. But he doesn't understand, or he doesn't want to acknowledge, that the president has little direct control over any of this.
If they continue, however, the protests could have an impact on the November election, Traugott says.
I think the protests generally do favor Donald Trump because they are contrary to the views of a large portion of his supporters, and they would be more likely to turn out, while on the other hand, they could depress turnout among young people, mostly Democratic, who would support Joe Biden.
It is expected that President Biden will talk about efforts to combat anti-Semitism when he gives a keynote speech on Tuesday at the Holocaust Museum. Trump's week will also be busy with courtroom appearances related to his criminal trial in New York and preparations for a new campaign rally in New Jersey on May 11th. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with football. The fates of Angola, Libya and Morocco will be decided this month as the three African representatives land their opponents for the FIFA Futsal World Cup 2024 in Uzbekistan. The eagerly anticipated draw to be held in the historic Rajasthan Square in Smakaland on May 26th will shape the path of the continental trio as they gear up for the futsal biggest stage. For Libya and Morocco, the tournament presents an opportunity to build on their growing pedigree in the sport, having featured in multiple previous editions of the World Cup, while Angola, however, will be heading into the uncharted territory at futsal debutant on the global stage. Staying with football news, the first phase of the CAF B diploma coaching course, which got underway at the Gemstone Stadium, South Africa, ended on Sunday with 25 coaches hoping to attain their CAF B license coaching badges. The coaches are expected to finish the course after three phases in July. South African Football Association President Danny Jordan said, with this course, SAFA aims to accelerate coaches' education to reduce the widening gap of coaches and players ratio in South Africa.
We used to have one coach for every 200 players. We need to come down, if we want to be equal to Germany and Spain, to have one qualified coach with a license or professional license for every 20 players, and that is a tall order.
In basketball news, the Basketball Africa League got underway on Saturday at the Dakar Arena, where four contenders will fight for the remaining three spots for the playoff scheduled to take place later this month in Kigali, Rwanda. The four teams will play each of their three opponents twice over the course of the nine-day competition. Nigeria's Rivers Hoopers recorded 14 3-pointers, the second most three-pointers made in season four of the Basketball Africa League, for just behind 2023 BAL champions Al-Hakli SC. The Nigerian side improved their campaign to 0-2 after beating APR 86-82. The Nigerian champions shot 14-38 from behind the arc, just a pointer shy behind the BAA reigning champions Al-Hakli SC, who made more with 15 threes this season. In rugby, South Africa, Kenya, Madagascar and Cameroon on Saturday began their quest for Women's Rugby World Cup 2025 qualification in Antananarivo, Madagascar on Saturday. The Kenya national rugby women's team, the Lionesses, lost their opening match of the Rugby Africa Women's Cup 22-29 to host Madagascar. Kenya's national rugby head coach Paul Murunga says the result was not what they had expected. The Lionesses will face rivals South Africa in their next match before playing Cameroon in the last match of the tournament. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. So that's it for this Monday, May 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.